This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri, and with me is Michael Liebler. But we know him as M.L. Liebler, and everyone else does too. And M.L., give us a poem.
All right. This is a recent poem, Flag, it's called. An American flag rippling savagely in the late winter sun, the stripes waving on and on, a revolutionary handshake with the cold wind. This flag's fist is the future. Its shoulder turned towards the past. What do I have in common with that? A piece of cloth. What can I do for that at which it stands? I am as indifferent as I was as a young boy, my early years coming back on a raging northern wind. It was my Cub Scout three-finger salute to all the injustice, the racism, and the mean spirit that blows as aloft as yesterday's symbol, without a home, a man without a country.
Thank you for that. This is a professor, a literary arts activist, an arts organizer, the Murray Jackson Scholar in the Arts Award at Wayne State University. ML is author of 15 books and chapbooks, including the award-winning Wide Awake and Someone Else's Dream, and he is Wayne State University's finest. And we're going to hear all about everything you've done. And tell me about the Magic Poetry Band. Tell us what it was. Is it still going on?
Well, that's an interesting story. Yes, it is. It started in the mid-80s by accident. I mean, I was doing a recording at a studio and bringing in friend musicians who wanted to play with a crazy poet. And we recorded, mixed it and all that. Took it to public radio here in Detroit and played the reel-to-reel on there. And people started calling the radio station saying, who is that? Where are they playing? What? And the host put her hand over the phone and said, what do you guys call yourself? Well, I'd been inspired early on by Captain Beefheart and his magic band. So I said, the Magic Poetry Band. And she's a Magic Poetry Band. Where are they playing? We're not really even a group. But some of the guys were in the studio, and I said, do you guys want to play shows? And they said, sure. So that's when that started. My partner for many years was Farouk Zibe on saxophone. He passed away in 2012. I put that to bed, and then I kind of resurrected a new band called Coyote Monk, M.L. Liebler and the Coyote Monk Poetry Band. And that was really great because I had like these superstars from all these different groups and stuff. And it was a great band. But the band that I was with 25 years ago, we got back together towards the end of last year and started doing shows. And we're doing a new album right now. So, and that's back to being called the Magic Poetry Band because that's what they were.
Second life.
Second life. Yeah, it's pretty good. We got a show tonight, as a matter of fact.
I haven't seen you for 30 years and you have not slowed down one bit. And you are just, you're a hero. Uh-huh. But more than being magic, you're a poet. So let's have a poem.
Okay, I'm going to read one since we are now siding with Russia.
Did you ever think you'd say that in the 60s?
No, never. Are you kidding? I mean, the John Birch Society used to call my grandparents' house and threaten me when I was a kid. But at any rate, this is I've been to Russia, as I tell people, four times. We do not want to become this place. It's the people are great, but it's just a very closed society. So, and when I go there or when I've been there, I would end up at this place called Novosibirsk, which is in the middle of Siberia. It used to be where they sent prisoners and mostly Jewish prisoners. Well, they ended up building one of the great, it's the third largest city now in Russia, and it has a subway system and it has the state-of-the-art opera house and museums. And anyway, that's so it's a 48-hour train ride on the Trans-Siberian Express from Moscow to Novo, straight 2 days. But anyway, when I go there, when I was there, I would do some classes at universities. And I met this one girl in this class, and she had written a poem. And this is pretty much a true poem. For Irina, girl in Siberia. I'm taking back from Russia a young girl's poem written in the sadness of a gray university classroom. Through a slow Siberian rain, she wrote, "A young man dreams to escape the desperate overcoat of his too young country. On the streets of Siberia, soft wind pricks hard at all these gentle faces, hungry people moving through the emptiness of a sad moon that hangs alone above the house of scientists on Markovsky Prospect. Finally, I gather her poems up, tell her I will take them all to America where they will live. And I remember her, a young student who cried in the dark lines of her poetry, 'I want to live forever, but I can't bear my own mind here in this cold, cold distance away from everyone and everywhere.' I tell her, 'It's only a train ride, easy to Moscow,' but she doesn't have the ruble, and time is not kind to those who wait."
Hungry people moving. Hungry people moving. You mentioned Russia, but I am astounded to see that you have read your work and taught in Afghanistan, Israel, Palestine, Russia, China, France, the United Kingdom, Italy, Germany, Spain, Finland, and Paterson, New Jersey. Did you ever hit Trenton? Trenton's where it's at.
I went to a minor league baseball game with W.D. Earhart in Trenton.
Oh, that is a good enough. Good
It was
enough.
great.
We
It
just
was
don't
great.
want to be left out, you know.
No.
How did all this happen? How did you get access? Who funded this? What were you doing?
Well, now, like your producer, I have to kill everybody watching this if I tell the story, but
Oh.
I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. I fell into working with the State Department, doing cultural stuff. At first, it was in Germany and Munich. They had a bunch of American Haases, they called them, that were established after World War II, that did American programming. And they brought me over to talk about Detroit and during the Depression and that sort of stuff, and to read. So that was the start of it, and that just kind of escalated. They seemed to enjoy themselves so much. They said, "We want to bring you back and put you on a tour of Germany to all the embassies throughout the country." So I did that a long time ago now, and that just led to another thing. And so then the State Department sponsored a trip or two to Russia. And then they called me in 2011, I think it was, and they from the embassy, and they said, "We want you to go to Afghanistan to talk to young people and older people, and just to do poetry stuff. Would you take that mission?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." Because I'd already been working. I skipped a couple of places. I'd been working for the U.S. State Department in Israel, and that led to me doing it in the West Bank and Gaza at the time, and which I really, really liked there. They were very hip to Detroit and things in Ramallah. Detroit's big in Ramallah, so and the shawarma's really good there. But so I did that, and that led to one of the people that I was with in the West Bank. She got transferred to Afghanistan, and she asked. So they called me, and I said, "Yeah, sure." I thought, "How bad can it be? I've been in the West Bank and Gaza for a couple of years now." Well, I'll tell you, it was bad enough that I didn't even tell my wife what was going on until I got back. So it was a very interesting. I'm glad I did it. I don't think you could do it now, because I was escorted everywhere by the military.
What
And
year was this?
this was 2012, spring of
Oh,
2012.
not too long ago.
No,
Well,
not too long.
so I know you've been all over the world, and yet you are ML, and what you did was just shake a little magic wand in every country. And I just think you should. I don't know if you've written your memoir or not.
Yeah, it's coming out at, well, it's going to be probably done. It's in production now
How
at Cornell.
many pages is it?
Well, it's not, I didn't want it longer than a Woody Allen movie. So I'd say when it's done, it's probably going to be 150
I
pages or
bet it is a Woody Allen movie too. Let's
so.
hear more poetry from M.L. Liebler, our favorite.
Since we were talking about the Afghanistan thing, this is, I don't know if you can see it, but this is my more recent book, which actually won a Michigan Notable too. And there's a poem in here that the book is broken up into kind of America, Afghanistan poems, and then it finishes with what I call psalms, which are shorter poems. But this is a true story, and it's called Kandahar Mission Briefing. They brought me in quietly, sitting us all in a large half circle, a chalkboard, a captain, and a mission leader. The mission is to take this poet into city center Kandahar tomorrow. To get into the city, we will take four MRAPs. The leader will scout the road ahead for IEDs. The middle one will carry the poet and a turret gunner. The third and fourth vehicle will serve as lookouts and follow-ups. If any of these vehicles hits an IED, and if the vehicle doesn't tip, do not, under any circumstances, exit the vehicle. If the gunner is hit or killed, the poet must grab his legs like thus and hold on to him. You must not let go of the gunner. When we arrive at the outpost, soldiers in vehicles 1 and 3 and 4 will exit, search school grounds for insurgents disguised as Taliban poets. When the all clear is given, the poet will exit vehicle number 2 with body armor, helmet, and first aid kit. He will be surrounded by 6 soldiers. Once the okay is given, soldiers will slowly bring the poet into the building where the poet greets the director and 34 male Kandahar poets and authors. If room is not compromised, poet may take off his body armor. If scene seems dangerous, he must keep armor and helmet on at all times. After talk, reading, and hummus, we must leave grounds ASAP. No lingering. That's the captain talking. So that's an Afghanistan poem from that chapter.
After talk, reading, and hummus.
A
After
lot of
talk,
hummus.
reading, and hummus. Well, I bet that made you really fired up to read poetry. I bet you really felt inspired and enlightened.
Well, it was quite something. And one guy in the front row, because they don't mix men with women. I went to another, this is all in the memoir for sure, but I went to another encampment to meet with, and you may have heard of them, these women writers in Afghanistan that I think a person from DC started. I can't remember. She edited an anthology of their poems, but I went to meet with these women, and it was really, really quite interesting. They came into this compound. We had to be let in, and the big gate closed and all that. But and the women came in, and as soon as they got in the closed compound, they whipped off their Taliban things, and they were gorgeous, and they were great poets. They were really good poets. So, in addition to the men in Kandahar that I worked with, the women in this thing, they were just so good, and we spent a whole afternoon reading poems and talking and eating and drinking lots of hummus.
You know, ML, you have been conducting something, a humanitarian philosophy, no matter what you do. So I'm going to ask you something.
Yeah.
You've been teaching at Wayne State University your whole life, and you taught creative writing,
Yep.
American studies,
Yep.
labor studies, and world literature.
Yes.
Now, we know that you taught the subject matter, but what do you think that you conveyed, no matter what the subject matter was, because of who you are? No matter what you taught, what do you think you were really teaching?
Oh, wow, that's a good
But we
question.
know, I mean, I know the answer. So I wonder if.
Well, I think what I've been teaching, and this is what I've said in, department, whatever you call those things when they gather, retreats and stuff. I think the bottom line to it, and I've always believed this since I started in 1980, is people want to be loved and they want to know that they can give love. And I know that sounds very esoteric or fluffy for college, for a university professor to say, but I think that's what's at the heart of it. And I always treat the students as though I'm on the other side of the desk. I've never forgotten what it's like to be a student in that situation. I want the classes to be interesting, engaging, but also teach, making them aware of the world around them. So that's kind of,
Bingo, that was the right answer. You
was
win another poem.
it?
You win. And
Okay.
that means that winning the lottery means reading more poetry to us.
Okay.
Jamel Leibler from Detroit.
Thank you.
This is the poet and the poem from the Library of Congress.
Okay, this is a one that's in the more recent book. I'm working on a second book, but that memoir, by the way, which is called Hound Dog, A Poet's Memoir of Rock Revolution and Redemption.
Perfect.
Maria's the one behind that because she told me, all these stories you tell us when we're driving around, you've got to write a memoir. And so she made me buy a little tape recorder, a digital one, and she said, every day I want you to tell stories into it, call, and then call me when you're done. So that
Oh,
went on for quite a while.
really?
Yeah, and so that's what opened the door, and it's been a long time coming that I've been working on it. But this is a part of my story. I was raised by my grandparents, and it's not a secret. My grandma was a real Elvis fan. So by the age of four, I was totally into Elvis Presley and rock and roll music at that time. But one of the other, this is another part from this the more recent book, the American part of it. Man on the Moon. When the first man landed, I was 15 and the world was at war. I sat on our cement front porch of our brick ranch home while grandpa drank a beer. Grandma sat inside that hot July eve on the plastic covered couch, and she kept calling updates through the screen door. Mike, Vern, get in here, she yelled. There's a man walking down a bright white ladder onto the moon. We were listening to the ball game on Grandpa's small transistor radio when a colorless, scratchy image of a man jumping off a grainy ladder onto the surface of a place we'd only seen from our bathroom, old bathroom window. Look at that, would you? She said. My grandmother and grandfather only lived another 10 years, but on that hot July night, we were excited. All of us huddled on a small front porch, watching a small black and white TV through a screen door, marking one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Look at that, would you? Look at that, would you? I bet they loved you.
Oh, well, I love them. They were
Well, you
great.
come out of that.
My wife thinks I was spoiled because I was a lone child raised by grandparents. But I mean, I'm starting to see that now. Maybe I was.
But isn't that a something? Isn't that a gift to be with people that will play Elvis all day and you can do no wrong? I mean, that's like heaven.
Yeah. Oh no, it is. It is. And the thing is the irony of all that is the hospital I was born in is about one block down Woodward from my office at Wayne State. It's right next to the historical museum, Now Wayne State bought the building. It is Mortuary Science. That's the
Got
hospital
your
we
DNA all over the place. Every
came.
pavement has some of your DNA in it. And
That's
so
weird.
we want more and more. More, please.
Okay. This is the title poem of the book, short poem. I want to be once. When I pass from this world to another, I want to be greeted by my old dog, whom I loved more than much of my own life. I want to once again feel her warm fur, kiss her tender ears, pet that old pooch, and run together once more down the corridors of memory. So
What was her name? His name?
that dog lived to be 20, and her name was Cookie. And she was the best dog. Now I have a new dog. See, she just heard me say Cookie. I've got a new, we got a dog actually before ours passed away. Who, and she's like smaller. She's 5 pounds, a Yorkie poo.
Oh,
But
I know what they are.
she knows it. She's no Cookie. Her
Oh.
ears just went up again because she knew Cookie.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Oh
And for
my.
a long time, she thought she was still here. She'd jump off the couch and run in the bedroom where Cookie in her old age, and
Oh.
she still does
Those
that.
are God's creatures.
I
You
know,
take
I
care
know.
of, you know that.
Yeah.
What do you think of your poetry? I mean, hundreds of poems, hundreds of poems. Do you think there's a main metaphor in your life that you can grab onto? I mean, I know that I keep writing the same story over and over, and I think many people do, but your poetry seems more eclectic and more of the world as well. But do you think there is an ML Liebler metaphor?
Well, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that because of the memoir. I'm kind of thinking the way I teach, you know, a novel or a book or something, like what's the theme here? What's
Yeah.
going on here? I don't know if I've quite figured that out yet. You know, I don't know. I haven't figured it out.
Yeah,
It's
that's interesting
but I'm
because
looking for it because of that book. You know, I'm like, "Oh, if I read this book and didn't know this guy, what are themes that are coming to the surface here?"
yeah, in playwriting we call that the premise for the play. And I'll maybe another person other than you would be better to answer that question. Maybe
What?
even Maria.
No, well, you know what? I'm going to
Because someone
answer.
looks at all of your work and has read all of your work and says, you know, what is the overreaching arc here?
Yeah.
And it does, you know, it's all from you. So you're the source. So there must be a well, you know, we go to. And yet you go into the world so much as well as in, you go in, inside as much as outside. So it might be hard for you to find. But before that, let's have another poem.
Okay. Let's see. Well, this is I think this is one. This is an old one that you may have seen when Rattle did a blast. I didn't know they did that. It was in Rattle, I guess, at some point, and they do a poem of the day or something like that. And so they sent this poem out, and I started hearing from all of these people that they saw this poem from Rattle. And so I went back and looked at it, and I thought, oh, that's pretty good. That's all right. So this is called Allen Ginsberg's Dead. I know Allen Ginsberg's dead, and I want to write a poem for him just like everybody else wants to do, but I can't help but think of my neighbor who too died alone recently in his home of 30 years, and how he was a person who will never have a poem written in his honor or to his memory. He was a person who will never have his life enshrined in sound and symbol of verse or song. I didn't know my neighbor either, but I want to remember him with verse and poesy just the same. I want to celebrate his life as the important treasure he must have been as someone's husband, father, brother, friend. I want to do this simply because he lived. My neighbor wasn't famous, and I probably only saw him once or twice in all the years that I lived behind his back fence. But his words always made me amazed at the kindness of this world. When he spoke softly to me while he tended his garden, I don't remember his words as memorable quotes spoken by a famous person. It was just small talk spoken in the lexicon of the backyard. No howl or Kaddish or sunflower sutra, to be sure, but graceful words that rose and danced over the fence behind his red bricked house. So while I would really love to write a poem for Allen Ginsberg like everyone else, right now it seems more important for me to capture my neighbor's life, just another person whom I never knew. I'll write it all down in a poem that he'll never read and his family will never see, in print or here at a public reading. But isn't that what poetry is all about? Images speaking to the unspeakable in our dreams as we lie awake in our sleep. And now, because I've shared this poem with all of you, we are forever connected, all of our bones together, side by side in the rich graveyard soil of poetry and life.
I got the metaphor.
Yeah, I started to
It's
go ahead.
compassion. The metaphor is compassion.
Okay,
That's it. I hope it's not too sweet a word for you, but it's in every single poem you write.
okay.
It is your metaphor. It
I'm going to
was what you
remember that.
taught. It is what you say. It is how you move through the world. There are worse ways to move through the world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you've spent your life organizing writing organizations and literary arts organizations and being an activist. Why is it important to be an activist for the arts? Or are the arts an activist in their own being? Why are you spending 50% of your creative energy organizing people, writers' unions, societies, writing workshops? Why are you doing this?
Well, I think it goes back to I think it goes back to this idea that I always had. I come to poetry in a very strange way, Grace. I just started scribbling feelings down in my, that paper with a big fat pencil and the lines in second grade. And I didn't really, I scribbled sometimes in the textbooks and then they'd call my grandparents and I didn't understand it all. I mean, I come from a really working class background. I didn't know what a poem is. You'll hear in this last poem, if there's time for me to read it, about how grandma influenced me. But I had no clue until I got to the fifth grade. And when I got there, that we did the Raven. And I looked at that and I go, hey, wait a minute. What I'm writing has a lot of white space around it. And Mr. Wadke, bless his soul, he said this is a poem. I must be writing poems. And I still continued writing and writing and writing. But at least at that point, at 10, I knew what was going on with that. And so I wanted to, since I got into poetry and I'm the least likely person, what wouldn't other people like that too? It's kind of like this thing I started several years ago now called the All Access Cafe with differently abled writers and musicians in it. Because I was on a little reading circuit actually in Israel in the West Bank too with this deaf hip hop kid and who's pretty famous now. But I was with him and I would open the show doing music and poetry, sometimes with musicians and so forth. And people would come up to me in sign language and say, oh, I really like this poem. I really like this image. I like, and it would be translated to me. And it dawned on me, I thought, and this is really dumb, but I thought, oh, deaf people like poetry too. A lot of people probably like, now this is in more recent times, but my concept was if I could get into it, and it seems to be an important part of life, then I have to share that with, I want others in on it. And to see that. I want to make poetry like normal for normal people to read. And that's how I started doing it with music too. was the same concept. Hey, okay, they don't like poetry readings, or they don't seem to. This is going back into the early 70s. But if I put music to it, maybe. Well, then that's the Magic Poetry Band started. You know,
Oh,
my
I see.
stuff's all over, you know, streaming music, and some people can look it up. Albums going back to that first one and so forth.
I love the fact that we start from nothing because there's very little to lose. A.R. Ammon says, if you're nothing, you can do anything. And I thought, you know, I've got the credentials. Who's got
Yeah,
nothing
me
that
too.
I, you know? And so that enabled me. And
Yeah.
I love that because you've never changed from that little boy. You've never changed from that little boy jotting things in the spiral notebook. You've never thought you were other than, you know. And so,
Right. Well, that's what Grandma taught me. That's in the memoir.
oh, we're going to hear from her. Before we leave, I want to list your awards.
Yeah,
Now,
go
I
ahead.
know, and so don't be shy. These are just some of them. I mean, first, the American Indie Book Award, the Patterson Poetry Prize, the Best Detroit Poet by the Detroit Free Press, the Barnes and Noble Poets Award, the Writers for Writers Award, the four Library of Michigan Notable Book Awards. Take your breath, take a deep breath. Finalist for the prestigious Forward Book Award, the Tilly Olson Award, the Michigan Humanities Champion of the Year, the State University Distinguished Scholar Award. ML Liebler currently directs the Wayne State University Humanities Commons and the Detroit Writers Guild. And we would
Right.
like a closing poem.
All right. This is one that kind of sums up Grandma. And it's the title of the memoir is Hound Dog for this very reason. But this is a short poem called American, in the part of my book, American Psalms, American Hound Dog. You ain't nothing but Elvis was everything to me because he was everything to my sweet grandmother. Elvis was her cultural gift to me. When a boy is 4 years old, a character like Elvis is handsome, larger than life, and extremely cool. His movie characters became my heroes. I didn't watch cartoons. I didn't listen to cute kitty records on color vinyl. And Grandma didn't read me no fairy tales. Thank God, and screw the Three Bears. Grandma never took me to the library. Hound Dog was my literature lesson. All Shook Up became my politics. Love Me Tender was my Shakespeare. And King Creole was my Moby Dick. That was all pre-kindergarten, and I loved it. Grandma loved that I loved it, and I truly loved her.
The voice of M.L. Liebler, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We wish to thank the library for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund and friends of the program, Natalie Canivore and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.